The Big Nooner here on the firm of Harris and Marang. We do this bad boy every single Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thank you for being a part of our day. You know that we are stoked to be a part of your day, to get you set up for the rest of your day. After us, we'll turn it over to Duck Insider from 1 to 2, getting closer and closer to that Boise State game as football is about to be right around the corner. They'll have you from 1 to 2. Then it's the Fan Happy Hour with Luke Anderson from 2 to 3, and then it's primetime from 3 to 7, and then you get bonus action tonight. Timbers fan from 7 to 8. Jake Zivin and I will sit down with new manager of the Portland Timbers, Marty Cifuentes, on the program tonight. You won't want to miss that. 14 hours of live, local, continuous regional sports talk radio. Dave Bartu will join us here in about 10, 15 minutes to talk some more college football. But Danny, we'll start the Big Nooner here. I figured out how the path is going to be built for my new NFL team.
Is it selecting the Chargers because they have a built-in excuse because their starting center just got carted off the field?
No, stop. Mm-hmm. Oh, those poor guys. I used to be a Charger fan.
Justin Herbert's already like, yes, I have an excuse.
The excuses keep mounting for one Justin Herbert. No, I used to be a Charger fan.
I'm juiced up.
That, I am not juiced up.
I used to be a Charger fan because Ryan Leaf, number two overall pick, quarterback, Washington State. And LT's my favorite player of all time.
Weirdly enough, despite being in division, the Chargers weren't good when I was a kid.
They're the Royals to me.
Yeah, it was like, and not only that, same colors.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the powder.
The Royals won a World Series, and I was like, yeah, good for them.
And Chargers, when they had LT and Rivers, I'm like, yeah, dude, that's awesome. That's cool. I love it.
Lost the AFC Championship to my Pittsburgh Steelers.
That's true.
But like,
because Rivers had a torn MCL and LT could barely walk.
No. But again, very fun team, fun organization.
Should have won that game, too.
I was voting for the Chargers. LT is my favorite player of all time. Got to meet him way back in the day when I was a toddler.
It's weird. It's an in-division team for me that I never hated. Because they were never really a threat when I was a kid. They just weren't good.
Some quotes from Roger Goodell. Quote, there are definitely international cities that could host something like that, meaning the Super Bowl, but we would like to see an NFL team in such a city first. At some point, there will be an NFL team outside the USA. I have no doubt that this will happen one day.
If they keep pushing this drum of Mexico City, I'm going to lose my mind.
If there is a team in London, I will be a fan of that team.
Why?
That will be my team.
Why?
Because I love the city of London. So does my wife. So does my oldest. It's a great town.
I mean, sure, but it's like, you're going to get up at a butt crack to watch a game?
No, I'll only watch road games.
You're never going to watch your team play at home?
No, probably not. No, they'll make them like night games.
Yeah, I guess. It's still like...
Because like if you do like a 7:30
if
kickoff...
If I'm an NFL player and I'm playing in London, I'm pissed.
Well, I know. I also think
pissed.
I also think I want to be a fan of whatever dumpster fire that's going to be.
But I just said, like, if I'm on a London franchise, I'm pissed. The amount of money that you're going to lose in tax rates is astro-freaking-nominal.
Yeah, like, that's true.
Oh, I have to go there and pay those tax rates? No, absolutely not.
But that's why I think I'm going to be a fan of the team, because it'll just be a disaster.
Oh, yeah, dude.
And all my teams stink, so we'll just add it to the pile of my team stinking.
Congratulations. I'm the highest earner in my position, yet I make as much as a 30th paid player at the position that plays in the U.S.
And watch we get Joe Burrow, and life will be awesome.
I don't think that's going to happen.
There is going to be a team internationally. I've never been to Mexico City, so I can't root for Mexico City.
But it's the whole idea of not just the altitude, just everything that comes with being in Mexico City. I could see a team being in Canada.
I could see a team being in Montreal.
I could see Montreal, Toronto. I could see those happen.
Because Toronto's the Alouettes?
Argonauts,
thank
you. Yeah. Winnipeg's not big enough. They got the Blue Bombers in the CFL. But I could see it.
You want to play an NFL game in January in Winnipeg?
Montreal with the Alouettes.
I don't want to.
Yeah,
do
you
that.
You think Kansas City's cold in the winter? Brother, you think Green Bay's cold in the winter? No.
Get on up to Winnipeg.
I've been to Winnipeg in January and February. It's 20 and 30 below. No. No.
But I think that's why. I think if there's a team in London, look, I love the town. I love the country of England.
I think they'll spin
that's
up
gonna be my team.
NFL Europe again before they'll spin up an actual franchise.
I don't. I mean, according to these are Roger Dell quotes from this morning.
I know that. I just, the logistics of that are just one team. Nah, man. Even if you did two teams over there, that's just.
Well, you probably have to be very careful about scheduling. You probably do three road games in a row and you just stay in the States.
Congratulations. You now get to live in two different countries when you're traveling.
You might as well put a team in Hawaii.
Yeah, legitimately.
That'd be sick.
But like, and then,
I would definitely live in Hawaii.
I mean, guys would sign up for that.
If Hawaii got a team, I'd root for that team.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Except for the Rainbow Warriors. I'm going to take down my Stanford Cardinal this year, and I'm going to be pissed.
Just the Warriors now.
Oh, they're not Rainbow Warriors anymore?
They took that out now.
Oh, okay.
They're
still the Tampa Bay Devil Rays in my heart.
Yeah, well, you know, they took that out, too. Great logo, too.
Soft.
But the whole, not that I'm against it from, like, a fun standpoint. I think it'd be kind of dope, but, like, the actual logistics of it.
Oh, I agree.
Just pure, unadulterated nightmare fuel.
Oh, I agree. It's a stupid idea. I think it's super dumb to have. Look, I understand wanting to make more money, but, like, dude, the NFL is just the NFL. It's just America, man. North America's the only people that truly care. You already have international games. They do all right. I remember being in a cab in London, and the guy was like, what is with the NFL? My kid won't shut up. Mm-hmm. I asked him if he wanted to go to, I think the cab driver was like, I asked my son if he wanted to go to the Arsenal-Chelsea game. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, can we go to the Jags NFL game instead? And the cab driver was like, why?
What is this game that you speak of?
Look, I think there is some definite to have it, but I don't know, man. We saw NFL Europe. I think it's a cool thing to have.
I think it could circle back around. I think it could get rebooted.
I think it's a cool thing that fans enjoy going to see games when they're in Europe or in South America or Central America, Mexico. But I agree. I don't think it's the right thing.
They're better as standalones.
Yeah, it's not the right thing to do it permanently. But if they do something that dumb, I'll jump on board. Yeah.
I don't see it happening within the next 1 to 5 years, but you say 10 years down the line, we have a team in Canada or we have worked out logistically to get a team in Mexico. I'm not against that.
Now, this could be something that's a little akin to your thought, Danny, of NFL Europe. This is on the text line. They'd have to have a Europe division for four teams so they could play each other and reduce travel. Could you put a team in Munich, London, Barcelona, and Paris?
Probably.
And that's
at that point in time, why not just spin up NFL Europe?
Dude, you can't. I don't think the NFL is ready for four expansion teams.
That's what I mean. So, but if you had NFL Europe,
could you move Jacksonville, the Jets? I don't know why I chose the Jets just for funsies. Well, I mean, they already have two teams.
But not just that. It's also geography adjacent. Yeah. Like, and not only that, Shad Khan and the Jags have volunteered to be London's team.
It's really redundant when the New York Jets don't travel very far for their schedule.
They don't. Buffalo's right there. New England's right there.
The New York Jets could take a bus ride to every single one of their games.
Well, Miami. In division. Miami's pretty far.
But again, once a year.
Can I fly to Miami faster than I can drive to Idaho? New York?
You can fly to Miami faster than we can drive to Idaho. This is what, 6 hours?
5.5,
Yeah. Because it's that long of a flight for us from us to freaking New York.
Is it 5.5 from here to New York? Oh, okay. I thought it was longer than that.
We basically did that flight last year.
6.5 hour drive from here to Boise.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, Boise's way in, though. I'm talking the line.
It's not that far in. It's 40 minutes in.
Still, that's 40 minutes.
Lewiston?
Yeah, give me Lewiston. Yeah, Lewiston's probably 5.5. I've done that drive a billion times.
550.
540.
Yeah, split the difference.
Yeah, well, you people are driving slow.
I mean, but again, that's just...
Who got pulled over yesterday morning?
Again.
Me. Same spot.
In the same spot. Mm-hmm. They're just waiting for you now.
I couldn't go to the DOL yesterday because, well, they're closed on Mondays. I knew if I said that, Danny would get very upset about that. And sure enough, he is.
What would you say you do here?
The DOL.
You can put it on the board!
The DOL is closed on Mondays, as is the DMV. Those are separate things now, too.
I know.
To go get my registration renewed, I can't go to the DMV. I have to go to the DOL. There's a DOL in the Ace Hardware by my house, though.
That's Washington, though.
I'm going to go there today.
You're there. Man, I don't have to deal with you.
I'm going to put my Coug plates on my car.
Are you?
Mm.
I've debated getting veteran plates just to get the permanent one so I never have to do it again.
Do you think you get pulled over less if you got the vet plates?
Probably.
You think cops are like, ooh, yeah, I like that guy. America. I
mean, probably.
I think so. I bet you get lucky.
I can apply for the disabled ones, too.
You're welcome, USA.
I think if he sees my Cougs one, he's going to be like, ooh, hey, whoop, whoop.
Yeah, there's beer in there.
Sir, have you been drinking? Officer, it's 8:30 in the morning. My question stands. Sir, have you been drinking?
Yeah, I mean.
Go Beavers.
That's like a duck.
Let's bring in Dave Bartu. Let's talk a little college football. Our buddy Dave Bartu will join the show here in a moment. 105.1, The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. Oh, college football's coming up, so let's have a little fun with that. We'll bring in a fan favorite of 1080, 105.1, The Fan Sports Network. I know Isaac Rupp loves this man. I know Danny Morang loves this man. I love this man. We all do. It is Dave Bartu, College Football Matrix. Dave, thanks for joining the show, amigo. I want to ask you this question. It almost feels like to me that people like you who nerd out on this stuff so amazingly, you almost prefer the preseason than when games actually start.
No. I love it when the games start, right? And now, here's the thing, though. This might be a little different, though, perception-wise, is one of the happinesses I get out of it is trying to find out where everything went wrong.
Mm.
Right? You know, the pursuit is always coming up with a formula or data that shows, you know, breaking something down, or, you know, how can I help a Dan Lanning with going for it on fourth down or going for two, or, you know, changing the way a game outcome. But so often the data points to X and then Y happens. Right? And so, it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. So
why did that? Right. So it's like, I know this sounds crazy as heck. I enjoy it when I'm wrong because it makes me stay on the blackboard and try to find answers.
Yeah. I think Bill Connolly agrees with you the way he does it too. It's like, we don't want to predict. There'd be no fun if the data told us what was going to happen. It's more fun when we figure out how the data was so wrong.
Exactly. It is, and that's a weird way to look at it, but I can't wait to be wrong in week one.
Bartu, you sent me something you just popped out here, and kind of fitting alongside that, looking at the Big Ten, the coach cues and kind of, I would say, indicative qualifiers for the 18 coaches. And I want to make sure I get the numbers right here, because I think for most people, they're always like, well, what's the sample size? You know, what is this actually like? What's it based on? You've got your upset tell here, 16 seasons of drive data, 403,335 drives, 16,111 games. So this isn't like, well, you know, over the course of, you know, two seasons. Like, no, man, there is a disgusting amount of data to where you always want more, because that's you're able to filter out for noise. But you're profiling the Big Ten coaches and some of the cues that come along with those. And you've got some, I think, some pretty distinct outliers with the likes of Matt Rhule on one end and Sig on the other. But what did you learn through this process and some kind of indicative statements or tells or cues, as you call them, in this profile?
Yeah, well, what I was looking for is, one of the questions I always have is, what makes an upset, right? Is there some sort of pattern in football that we can go, hey, if A plus B plus C, this game's on upset alert? And so I started digging into it, and I filtered out all of the games except for those when you're a favorite. Now, you know, I know for some programs, that's not a lot of football games. But when it comes down to upsets, I was looking for, as a fan, when should I go, uh-oh, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and so I started with Oregon. You know, I'm an Oregon alum, and so, you know, Dan only has 8 losses. 3 of them are blowouts. And so I'm like, okay, we got 5. How many of them are underdogs? And so when you look at his losses as a favorite, there's only 5 of them. And there's 2 things that stood out. Now, what stands out for Dan doesn't stand out for everybody. But mm-hmm. for Oregon, and if you're a Duck fan, and you can find the article online, is if you're trailing at the end of the first quarter,
something didn't go right. And if it's almost like if the script gets altered early, the plan B, C, and D aren't mm-hmm. maybe quite as well connected as plan A.
Exactly. So five losses that were close all trailed at the end of the first quarter, okay? When he's leading at the end of the first quarter, hasn't lost a football game. Mm. Now, here's the other thing, though, on those to qualify the ones where he's trailing. His offense and his defense is also not working. Normally, in a Duck win, first quarter, Offense runs about 22 plays in the first quarter. Defense faces about 20. Pretty balanced.
Mm-hmm.
In all the losses, the defense faced 26. The offense only ran 15. Massive flip, right? So not only are you behind, your defense is on the field too long, and your offense isn't staying on the field. So, you know, it takes a double whammy. But once that's avoided, that first quarter, pretty tough to beat him. But everybody has a little bit different tells inside those numbers.
And that's actually where I wanted to go with this, because you've got, you know, the longest tenured head coach in major college football in Kirk Ferentz, and he's got a tell in there. I think it's pretty indicative of his style of play over the course of his career at Iowa. And it's Iowa football to the extreme. It's taking care of the ball. And you have it lined out as if that second turnover happens, well, there she wrote. Like, how many of these tells do you see among these 18 coaches where they become so synonymous with stylistically of who they are and the identity that they've created?
Right. It was amazing when Kirk's popped out, and the system was literally like this complete byproduct of his control, offense, and defense. And he runs such a tight, in the phone booth kind of game mentality that – the turnovers are what destroy him. And so now you and I both know turnovers are a lot luck. You, mm-hmm. you don't really create them, you know. I mean, you try to, but everybody preaches it. So you're trying to minimize the damage. So with Iowa, yeah, when that second turnover against his team pops up, he's in hot water. And I can't remember what his record was, but it was a ridiculous amount of his losses come with 2+ turnovers.
I mean, when you take a look at that, when we had you on last week, we were talking about the idea of momentum. How much of the momentum of these coaches also factors into their individual cues and tells?
In fact, well, momentum is the biggest thing out there. You know, you look at Dan. When he has momentum, he's lost 3 games in his career.
Mm-hmm.
When Kirk Ferentz has momentum in his favor, he's lost 9.
In his career.
Cool. Nick Saban, when he has momentum in his favor, lost 5 games total.
Wow.
You know, Kirby Smart's lost 1. Ryan Day, when he has momentum, is 77-0.
So it's
incredibly important.
So basically, if they have momentum, does that become the, like, even if their cues here pop, the momentum will trump it? Like, did you see any correlation or I shouldn't say correlation? How many outliers existed, or I don't know if you've looked at this in the sense, how many outliers have existed out there that pertain, that still hit with their cues, even with momentum? Do those even exist?
Good. That's a great question, right? Because these upset cues, I literally started looking at it in the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't run it against momentum to see. Now here's the thing. Look at some of these things, okay? Think about the momentum and game control. You're down on, you know, you're for Oregon, you're trailing. You're Iowa, you're down on turnovers, right? These are all negative game control, all negative momentum episodes that are going against your team. And so what I've found is that all of these things, the thing at the bottom is momentum, and everything else contributes to it, whether it's turnovers, lack of explosive plays, creating explosive plays, being behind in the first quarter. I think what we'll find is all these losses are in parallel with not having game control as well.
Mm. It's Dave Bartu of the College Football Matrix. Dave, can we keep you for one more?
Absolutely, sir. Just cruising down 84 towards Pendleton right now.
Excellent. I love it. See, he's going to Idaho too. We'll take a quick break. Dave Bartu, College Football Matrix. I want to ask some questions about top 10 teams that'll fall out of rankings if data suggests that, and why the hell we have polls to begin with. But we'll toss it to Casey first with sports. Dave Bartu joining us, College Football Matrix, for one more Seggy. As football is near and dear to our hearts here at The Fan, your home of the Oregon Ducks. Don't forget that. You can catch every single game right here on the Fan Sports Network. Dave, I wanted to ask you something. You were talking last segment about kind of, you know, the prediction part is part of the fun, but you're more interested these days in figuring out where things went wrong. Let's use the moniker that seems to continue to run its course, that a top 10 team will inevitably finish unranked. Is there a way, how are you able to try to combat that? Because, you know, Florida State famously a couple years ago, I think it's 9 of the last 10 years the top 10 teams falling out. Is there any way to predict that? Or is that part of the trying to figure out where upsets come from?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you can predict it exactly, but I think we can raise some red flags.
If you raise red flags, I think a lot of people are talking, you know, maybe Texas A&M, maybe Ole Miss, hell, maybe even Indiana. What does your data suggest where that could go?
Well, you know something? Well, A&M, I think, is a great one, okay? Let's start there. Is the biggest red flag, to me, is in 2025, that was the best offense they have had this century. And their offensive coordinator is gone.
Mm-hmm.
A brilliant player, brilliant coach, now the head coach of Kansas State. And Mike Elko went, this is not safe for work, so cover your ears, kids. Mike Elko went next man up. Oh, I hate saying it, okay? You're a top 20 recruiter. You shouldn't be going next man up. I just don't like it, right? And I think maybe my PTSD comes in with Mark Helfrich, right? Mm-hmm. They went next man up, and then we saw four straight years of regression. So not only did they go next man up, they went with a wide receiver coach that's never called plays. Never called plays. So you got a new offensive coordinator, never called plays. I just don't like it at all. And last year, A&M's defense was bad. It was 56 in the country. It was the worst playoff defense that was out there. They did get rid of their defensive coordinator. Kentucky took him, and now Kentucky has the worst defensive coordinator in the SEC. So I think A&M is, even if Colin stayed as the offensive coordinator, I still think they're due for a slide. Maybe not out of the top 25. Are they in the top 10 right now?
Yeah, number 8 in both coaches and AP.
Yeah, I'll sell that, dude. I will sell that with an inexperienced offensive coordinator all day long. I know they got the returning quarterback of Marcel Reed, but, you know, the question is, how good was he relative to the play caller? Was it more about the play caller fitting it to his strengths or vice versa? I'll fade A&M. And it sounds like you're willing to fade A&M with me.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I want to stick with rankings for a second. Look, I'm a firm believer that rankings, there should only be one. We don't need college and we don't need coaches and AP. I would love to see a ranking system similar to what you do in terms of just let the data speak for itself, and then we can eyeball any sort of misses that we need to. But do these rankings play any part into what the computer spits out? Or does your computer spit out pretty close to what these rankings provide?
Oh, like the preseason crap?
Yeah.
look at it. We're talking about it.
True. That's why I'm asking. Like,
right? We're talking about it. Now, does it have any impact on the playoff teams? No. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we ranked Kent State number one and Georgia unranked, is that going to play itself out?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is. It always does. It always does, right? And so, as long as we understand the AP Top 25 and the coaches poll and all this, it's just a bunch of BS for fun and entertainment. That's cool. It's when fans think it actually has an impact. Now, it may have a recruiting impact, a narrative or something like that, but I think with NIL money, a lot of that's gone away too. So, you know, the only rankings that ultimately matter are those at the end, and those are part of the playoff committee. None of these preseason things have any correlation or any effect. People like to go, well, Georgia was number one to begin, and now they're number one with the committee, so it's correlated. No, they just happen to be really good teams. You know, there's only so many really good teams, so I don't worry about it. But it's fun water cooler discussion as long as people don't take it seriously.
Dave, let's put it back in the backyard and look at Oregon. The talent profile they have is probably one of the best they've ever had. The way the schedule is lined up for them, I think it's more favorable than most of the other teams in the top 10. When you look at Oregon this year, is this a – I know this era of college football, it's so much more wide open, and the data suggests that, you know, anybody can do it in a sense if they get it right. But when you look at Oregon right now and their profile, coaching, and player profile – is this kind of a make-or-break season for them? Is this the time that they have to win a national title?
No, no, it's not a make or break season for them. Number one, the data doesn't show anybody can do it. I know people want to point to Indiana, but you know something? That's the greatest anomaly in my lifetime, and I don't expect it to be repeated. But at the same time, too, is understand, Indiana did that with the highest graded staff in the country. Okay? Offensive coordinator, head coach, defensive coordinator, special teams coordinator. That was the number one group coming into 2025 last year. Okay? So they had a huge ceiling of coaching. Now, for Oregon, no, it's not make or break, right? Because look at Dan's number. Look at him. I look at him. I profile him. Number one, we talked about momentum. Okay? His momentum generation is about 84%. Kirby Smart's at 86. Nick Saban's at 88. His momentum generation is very, very good.
Dave,
his close rate. Can
you explain momentum, what you mean by that?
It's a series of combining the offense and defense over time in a game to control a game. So it's not just like a play where you hear on the radio, you know, on TV, it's like, oh, that score changed the momentum.
Right.
Maybe a little bit. But true momentum, true game control is a series of about 12 to 20-plus plays that really control the game. It's not just one event. Dan is excellent at manufacturing it. It requires team working together. It's not an offensive thing or a defensive thing. It's a combination of the two. So Dan is very good at manufacturing it. He's elite. He is a semi-elite closer. I wish he only had one or two losses, not three, but I'll give two of them to being too aggressive on fourth down. If he punts and ignores the negative EV play inside his own 50, he probably only has one loss. He is excellent at survivor. And that means when you don't have momentum, how well do you win? Mm-hmm. Kurt Cignetti is good at it. Dan is elite at it. Do we have top five talent each and every year? Yes, we do. Okay, so this isn't make or break. It comes down to me is the talent's going to be there. You have the head coach. 100% believe in Dan, and I think he's going to get better as he learns as he goes along. So the ultimate question comes down to the coaching. Right? Cignetti had it. Ryan Day had it. Kirby Smart had it. Saban had it. All of them had really high-level OCDC combinations. That's my concern this year.
You lost your OC.
Yep, we went next man up. You lost your OC. You lost your DC. Now, on the DC side, you have an experienced defensive coordinator in Hampton who had a top 25 year at Tulane. I really believe in Chris Hampton's ceiling. It projects very, very high, but I'm still holding my breath. But I do believe in his potential there. The flip side, Drew Mehringer, the offensive coordinator, okay? He's been an offensive coordinator for 1 year, and it is one of the 10 worst seasons graded as an offensive coordinator in the last 16 years. It's horrible what he did at Rutgers, okay? So now I know a lot of fans are probably going, but Dante Moore. I get it. If Moore is that good, he will elevate him. Okay, just like Leavitt did at Arizona State. He elevated Marcus Arroyo, who without Leavitt and without Justin Herbert is a terrible offensive coordinator. So can Moore do it? We're going to find out what's stronger, Moore's ability or Drew's ability to learn and adapt and try to perform. That's what scares me this year, and that's why I say don't put all your eggs in one basket, because to me, Oregon is not a complete national championship team because of that uncertainty at coordinator.
Something fascinating that popped out of your coaches in the Big Ten is the idea of Pat Fitzgerald being on the hot seat already at Michigan State. Bro just got there. Is that more indicative of kind of the tumultuous state of the Spartan program, or is this Pat Fitzgerald maybe not fit for a head coaching job anymore?
No, this is me trying to be a jerk.
That's not very nice, right? Dave.
Oh man, you know something? Well, look. Sometimes I love predicting things. You know, and this is one. So this is what I'm really trying to see way out in advance. Right now, hear me out. Here's why he's on my hot seat. Okay, Michigan State fan still thinks D'Antonio and that playoff team's walking back through that door. Okay. So their expectations for this guy is really high, okay? Now, Pat Fitzgerald, for his career, slightly above average head coach. Solid, okay? Solid. Really good on the road. But 4 years before he got fired from Northwestern, he lost his defensive coordinator, Hankowitz. And I would argue top five most underappreciated coordinators in the last 20 years. Unbelievable defensive coordinator. When you got to sit down and talk to him about his base defense and defending the red zone, blow your mind. Absolutely blow your mind about his simplicity. So as soon as Hankowitz left, Pat Fitzgerald went in the tank. And I'm not talking about a little bit in the tank. I'm like talking Mike Loxley bad in the tank. Okay? Three of his last 4 years at Northwestern were fired, fired, and fired. He was horrific. He was 11 games under average coach at Northwestern in his last 4 years without Hankowitz. Okay? Guess what? He doesn't have Hankowitz, and his staff isn't very good. I know it's too early to say he's on a hot seat because technically he's not, but I really think of all the guys that got hired, I think Michigan State took a massive risk. I think he's enormously overrated, and he's got to really, really prove it to me over the next 3 years for me to start believing about him.
I know you and I are kind of in lockstep as far as the idea of like who can actually win a national title. And I don't want to go down that path, but who is a team that is not getting the love they should be based on their coaching profile, their talent profile, their schedule, everything that kind of plays into everything there? Who is that team, whether it's a top 25 team, top 40 team, that you're looking at that based on everything that you've seen should outperform all of the public side thoughts or debates around them versus what the actual data says?
Man, I'm an eternal pessimist, and so I like talking bad about teams. Like, why is Steve Sarkisian such a bad head coach?
Why is Michigan the most overrated program?
Amazing, you know. And I want to believe in Lane, but first year head coach in the transfer process. Lane's worst year at Ole Miss, first year. FAU, first year. First year's really, really hard. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at the talent and the coaching profile, there's really nothing in the ACC. You got Notre Dame and Miami. You got really good staffs. You got really good talent. In the Big 12, there's no talent there at all. There's nobody to discuss in the Big 12 competing for a national title. I don't see it. Yes, the Texas Tech has a great staff, and I love it because I helped put it together. but talent-wise, still not there. And Cignetti as a head coach is just a different level of wizard, dude. It's just amazing. So I think it still comes down to all your elite talent plus Indiana. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's really any other dark horse out there, even though people want to believe there's another Indiana. I don't see the staffing and talent combination that's at Indiana right now, at Indiana the last year, that's out there today that I'd say, yeah, I actually really believe that's a dark horse to win a national title. Playoff team, that's different. But national title, no, I'm not buying it.
It's Dave Bartu, College Football Matrix. Dave, we'll get you out on this. One question, something that Danny and I don't quite understand. I'm just going to throw two programs at you, the hype behind them this year, and I'm curious if the data supports it or not. One is the Michigan Wolverines, and the other is the Washington Huskies. Big years expected for both of them, especially up north in Seattle. With the Damon Williams drama, they lost a ton of weapons to the draft, and then Michigan, which still hasn't found the forward pass, they seem a little overhyped for me. What does your data suggest?
Are they both top 25 right now?
Yes, sir. Top 20.
Oh, Michigan, I'll throw them out right now. I'll throw them out right now.
Danny and I don't understand it. That Michigan team is not very good.
Well, look at all the drama around the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Right? Look at all the discombobulation and the turnover, and it's just it's a mess.
We love Whittingham. Is it just stock in Whittingham?
I think so. And again, first-year head coach at a new spot. You know, I think we're expecting average here. So, you know, maybe 7-5, maybe 8-4. You know, I think 9-3 would be incredibly exceptional for them to stay in the top 25. I really, really do. I think it's just a lot of growing pains with a fully new staff, a roster turnover. I'm not buying it, especially in a very, very well-coached Big Ten. There's just a lot of potholes, maybe not a lot of talent, but there's a lot of teams out there, like in Iowa. Mm-hmm. Is Iowa in the top 25?
Oh, shoot. I just had it up.
I'll flip Iowa and Michigan in a heartbeat. Now, with Washington, Washington quietly has one of the best defensive coordinators in football. Ryan Walters is awesome.
Iowa's 22.
Okay. So, again, just drop Michigan, but leave Iowa in there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think with Washington is the defense is going to carry them. You do have a returning quarterback. Jed Fish as a play caller is pretty mid. He's in the 55-60th percentile. I just don't buy the hype. I don't think he's that good as a head coach. He's pretty mid as well. But then again, an average offense with an elite defense. I think what you're betting on here is you have a top 25 scoring efficiency defense last year. Can that become a top 10 or 15? So, and you look at the schedule, it is favorable. I could see them squeaking out 9-3. Jed catching a little bit of a lightning in a bottle, but am I betting them as a team that's going 10-2, making the playoffs? No, I'm not doing that. I think the staff isn't good enough. I don't think Jed Fish is good enough. But if Ryan Walters can get hot, he's proven it. He can put up a top three defense. So to me, if you're betting on Washington at 10-2 and in the playoffs, you're putting all your eggs in that defense.
He's Dave Bartu, College Football Matrix. Thanks for joining us, buddy. Travel safe. We'll catch up down the road.
Take it easy, guys.
Thanks, Arthur.
Dave Bartu, College Football Matrix. Always fun to chat with him. He's always got a ton of stuff to go. I'm telling you, Michigan doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
I don't. And the way he phrased that, flip Michigan and Iowa. Remember when we did the schedule, I was like, the only hesitation I had with that was that it's play the big house.
Exactly.
Like, that's the only, if it's in Iowa, I'm taking Iowa to cover.
Without a doubt.
Like, neither team can throw the ball, but one of them doesn't have the stank of Michigan over it.
Yes, one of them has decided not to throw the ball. The other one's just like,
can't.
What's throwing the ball? Yeah. We come back, closing arguments to send you on your way. 105.1 The Fan. All right, that's going to do it for us. Closing arguments are brought to you by Oregon Divorce Mediation Services, presented by our friends at Leskin Law. For more information, visit leskinlaw.com. Coming on the program tomorrow, be a Casey and Yours Truly edition.
See ya.
See ya later. Bye. We'll get into some Christian McCaffrey's issues when it comes to dollar bills.
I'll hold in.
Touch on a little Jerry Jones, Micah Parsons, revisit that. Also, there's a weird Ketel Marte situation going on in baseball, and I think it's time to revisit old Jerry DePoto and his 54%, as we may say adios to the Seattle Mariners in 2026. So a lot of fun to have on the program tomorrow. As far as baseball matchups go tonight, here's some ones you can watch on the bump. Carlos Rodon coming off the IL today for the New York Yankees there in Baltimore. Braxton Ashcraft is going to throw for the Pirates. If you haven't seen him, he's great against Detroit. Zach Wheeler on the bump for Philly against Miami. Nick Martinez, Jose Soriano. Toronto at Tampa should be a good game.
I don't know why this is such a great bit for me, but I love it. I love it.
South Side versus the North Side. Chicago White Sox at Wrigley tonight. Kevin Gausman on the bump for the Cubs. And let's hope those idiots don't get in a fight again in right field. Oh, no. Weird. White Sox fans got in a huge fight with Cubs fans at Wrigley yesterday. I'm shocked. Please stop. No.
There's a huge fight apparently at Broncos training camp.
I did see something like that.
Nick Petonio apparently got into it.
Okay. Whatevs.
Ball's here.
Whatevs. But kind of just a little bit of reaction post Dave Bartu there. I love that concept of predicting's not as fun. It's trying to figure out where it went wrong. I love that. I love that. I think that's really cool.
It's like, because that's how you get the predictive analytics to be better.
That's why
I asked them the question, comparing momentum to the outliers. Like, is there, because to me, that tells you what a true, no doubt, dyed-in-the-wool, wild upset is. Because if all of your positive momentum cues have hit, but your negative cue hit on top of that, and either you won or like the deciding factor of like whether or not you won or lost, if your positive momentum's there and your negative cues hit and you lost, that gives more staying power to your negative cue and really pushes the outlier upset to kind of the outbounds of that data.
Yeah, it's also fascinating to me that like he hates that Elko put next man up, but he has more faith in Dan, so Lanning's next man up is still a concern, but not crazy.
I think he was pretty heavy on the I'm watching this.
I agree with that. That'll do it for us. Closing arguments brought to you by Oregon Divorce Mediation Services, presented by our friends at Leskin Law. For more information, visit leskinlaw.com. Oregon Divorce Mediation Services, the alternative to divorce court. We'll catch you tomorrow. For Danny Morang, that's Casey Smith. I'm Patrick Harris. Go do something I would do.
Bye.